You are listening to the News Project Podcast for the week of August 17th, 2020, brought to you by GNAT TV. This podcast brings you these stories. The Vermont Council on Rural Development hosts forums. Londonderry has an alpaca guard dog problem. This is a partial discussion. To hear the entire discussion, go to the Londonderry government page at gnat-tv.org. And Vermont is seeing an influx of children.
The Vermont Council on Rural Development, a nonprofit organization which aims, as its name suggests, to bolster the progress of Vermont's rural communities, is in the middle of hosting a series of forums designed to share ideas and initiatives already developed or under development, but to also look ahead to the recovery phase. What will the new normal look like? The council is hosting online forums for each county across the state, and on Thursday, August 13th, it was Bennington County's turn. More than 60 people from across the county took part. Following an opening introduction by the council's executive director, Paul Costello, the forum broke into four separate sessions, focusing on housing, childcare and education, welcoming new residents to Vermont, and local food and food security. We had the chance to talk with Paul Costello afterwards about the forums and the takeaways the organizers were getting.
The timing on this has stretched out, and the uncertainty is extremely stressful. So one of the things that we hear wherever we go, Andrew, is that people are planning and organizing with great urgency towards a future that is totally uncertain. And that tension, the tension between those two things, means that a lot of people are under significant stress, and we know that, you know, families who are worried about childcare, working from home, at the same time they're uncertain about the schools, and they're nervous about their children's health, and meanwhile their children are not getting the socialization that the parents might hope for, and there's just this intensity of home life where you're trying to entertain and educate your children at the same time you're working and trying to maintain normalcy. And so let's face it, everyone, you know, the word people use about our times is weird. You know, these are weird times, and we're getting through it, and people are putting themselves on the line in really fresh ways for their communities, but also in their own home lives. And I guess some of the other things we're hearing is how the crisis puts certain things on point in terms of longer term recovery needs or even resilience needs towards the future.
We followed one of the breakout sessions, the one on welcoming new Vermonters, and the hour-long discussion yielded several points about building on the repopulating of the state, an issue of intense discussion before the arrival of the pandemic, and one that has been reshaped since last March, as Vermont has seen people moving here who can work remotely, believing that Vermont was a safer place to live right now, as well as being attracted by the rural lifestyle on offer here.
Sonar, I just lost an employee, very good employee this week, because she couldn't find an affordable place to live. And we've been over this topic many times in our region, but it is now that anything remotely affordable is being bought up, half of them sight unseen, by folks escaping the city. Now it's an acute level of lack of affordable housing, workforce housing in our region, and I think it's just going to get much worse over the coming months. So when we think about welcoming people, I'd like to include all of our employees and friends who need affordable housing.
Realize through the work that we've done that in addition to affordable housing at all levels, we need affordable and attainable childcare, more important than ever now perhaps, and a real issue. And the Regional Development Corporations of Vermont are coalescing with the Agency of Human Services around this issue, and the employer statewide to see, you know, what else might be done on that front. But childcare certainly is a huge issue in addition to affordable housing.
A second one is, I definitely hear the issue on childcare, but please think about after school, because there's an awful lot of us who have kids where they're not in childcare anymore. And it's that after school activity. If I think of the biggest thing, I was lucky that my oldest was already in high school when we came here, but the lack of opportunities for her to engage was pretty striking to me. And that's a huge barrier. And it's at least as big as the childcare issue.
One of the barriers is the difficulty to, you either need to be entry level or you need to be sort of at the top of your game. There are very few positions for mid-level professionals. So you, and that speaks to, I think, Elizabeth's comment about very small organizations. There's really very little opportunity for growth. So that, I think, you know, that is why that joke about everyone in Vermont has 2 to 3 jobs is, you know, is real, is because you really can't advance in a position unless you're in healthcare or education, where there, you know, there are enough positions that there's some diversity.
And also people saying, people say this, but there aren't any Black people here in Vermont. It's like that's an okay thing to say. It's not even true. I mean, and we have diversity, but we have to reach out to, you know, within our community, people of color. And I think we need to think a little bit outside of the box, because they might, you know, they might not be chamber members, but there are these informal networks that are happening, and how can we, you know, reach them and include them and really talk to them about what they would like to see. So
decisively, that rents in Manchester have finally started coming down to reasonable levels. And this has been something that's needed to happen for a while now. There's a lot of vacancies. And now that commercial real estate has been affected dramatically across the world, I guess, you know, we've talked a lot about economic development over the last couple of decades, but the bottom line was, to get a local person to start a business in Manchester was near impossible if you didn't have a chunk of money. And so now we're approaching the spot where rents are affordable enough to get local or visitors to come in and actually start viable businesses, which are interesting and funky and community oriented. And
the Northeast Kingdom and Rutland County will be next on the schedule for recovery forums. For the GNET TV News Project, I'm Andrew McKeever.
We've got a situation at our house where we've got some neighbors that have decided to start raising alpacas, and they went ahead and got themselves a livestock guardian dog. I guess this happened around mid-June, and we didn't know this. We didn't know this actually until Friday, but we knew about the dog mid-June, because it barks incessantly at night. We just thought it was a pet dog, and we kind of knew it was them. You could hear the dog. We like to leave our windows open at night, and it was to the point where we can't leave our windows open. And my wife and I, with the windows closed, she can't sleep with earplugs in her ears, because this thing is barking all night long. And what this dog does is, if it sees a threat or if it hears a threat, it's guarding their livestock, and it starts barking, and it does not stop. It can go for 20 minutes at a time and not stop. But, well, anyhow, my wife left a note on their gate Thursday and asking them, please take your dog in at night. because we didn't realize what the whole situation was. And Friday, I think it was the caretaker, because we don't know these folks at all. But I think she came down and she asked me if I had left a note on their gate concerning their dog. Well, I didn't know that my wife had done this Thursday. And I said, well, I didn't leave the note. And she said, well, someone's concerned about our dogs barking. And I said, well, I'm glad somebody else is. And I kind of let it on the line with her. I just told her, yeah, I said, you've got to lose this dog. It's taking away our sleep, you know? And, so what it came down to was, she said, well, the way I got used to it was I bought a fan for my bedroom and the fan drowns out the barking. So we'll buy you a fan.
A noisy fan.
And that way you'll get used to the fan and you won't hear the dog barking. And I said, that's not acceptable. I said, lose the dog. And, the conversation basically, she offered me this letter. It was a brochure and a letter, I guess, to explain the whole situation. I said, does the letter explain how you're going to lose the dog? And she said, no, because we're agricultural, we can do this. And I said, well, then I don't want the letter. And so she left and I went about my business. So we had to do a favor for our neighbor next door. Adam, he's here at the meeting, and we noticed that this note was tucked on their door handle. So we opened it because they weren't here. We had to check on their house for them, and we kind of read what was going on. And now we know that, you know, they're raising livestock in this house up here. They consider themselves a farm, I guess, all of a sudden, and they can take this dog and I called Pat Salo this morning. I'm kind of frustrated right now. I called Pat Salo.
There's Pat.
So I called Pat. Yeah. And he recommended that we should, you know, approach you folks with this thing. Cause we are kind of, at a loss right now is what to do. What do we do next? So I took the brochure to the town office this morning and the letter, and Tina made a copy of it.
They all have a copy of it.
Yeah, and it describes the dog, and for whatever reason, the dog is scared of fireworks and shooting. And the dog has bolted from the property a number of times, including today, last night. Matter of fact, it was on Facebook last night. The owner put the dog on Facebook, and they finally found it. But
as I recall,
well, there it is.
Yeah, there was something like a 4-day multi-town search for the dog around the 4th of July when it bolted because
at one point the dog was like 10 miles away from here.
But if you read the brochure on the dog, it tells you not to approach it. Don't approach our dogs without us present, because they are working and they may view you as a threat.
And so, we have children on this
And we have kids
road.
On the road.
We
here.
Have a lot of children down here.
It's a bad situation. It gets worse as I go on. And I don't know how they justify themselves being agricultural.
And it's a violation of the dog ordinance, which is no person shall keep or harbor any dog which by frequent or habitual barking, howling, or yelping disturbs the peace and quiet of persons of ordinary sensibility.
Right. But we're looking into whether or not their outfit there actually qualifies as a farm. Because if it doesn't, then the dog is certainly subject to the dog ordinance and all the provisions therein. So, Pat, I don't know what your take is on this.
Yes. I told her, she called me, and I told her that I didn't think that you should have a guard dog for her pets, which are her packers, their pets. I mean, because I don't think she has a farm. think you just have it for pets, I think. I mean, just because you have a total alpaca doesn't mean it's a farm.
Yeah, there are a lot of qualifications to meet to actually be determined a farm.
You know your neighbors, I think.
So,
when Bob Brindley opened or owned the lot that they own now, they bought the house. The lots that Bob bought were actually part of a plot that that we bought into for our house. And these plots were all designated residential. And then Bob Brindley bought those lots so that he had some property. He had very little property with his house to start with. He bought all those lots on the other side of Stone Hollow Road so that he didn't have people building in his backyard. So he went ahead and bought all those, but they were for houses. They were residential. And I don't know if that has any effect on because they were zoned residential, whether they can turn that into agriculture all of a sudden, I just thought I'd throw that in.
Excuse me for just a minute, Randy. Whoever's got the wind chimes, could you mute yourself, please?
It's my wife's phone. She's doing it.
Sorry. Well, whether it's zoned that way or not, Randy, there are a lot of other qualifications that have to do with the number of livestock, tax filing, income from products generated on the farm. So we're going to look into that, whether or not they actually qualify as a farm. But for the time being, I don't believe they do. And so they should be subject to citations for nuisance animals.
So how do we go forward from here?
I think
basically we just want the dog to stop barking so we can sleep at night.
Yeah, I mean, it's very interesting because they're asking for consideration from us, but I feel like they're not being considerate of their neighbors. We live in it's a neighborhood. There are multiple houses that surround. Their house kind of sits in the middle of a bunch of houses. So, and I really believe that they should have notified us that they were going to do this so that we could have at least protested then, because I never would have agreed to have a dog bark all night long. So anyway, that's my two cents. Adam, did you want to say something?
Yeah, if I may, thanks everybody for giving us an opportunity to chat. We were residents during the COVID from March through the end of June, and we definitely had an issue with the dog barking. It kept us up. We were up a couple of weekends ago. Same thing, we have the windows open. You can't sleep, the barking is incessant. And we'll be returning on September 1, possibly for a year in residence at that house. So. I was in receipt of the letter. I wrote a very nice email back to them saying, hey, listen, when you cause a problem like this, you can't just say, hey, thanks very much, but get used to it. You offer some sort of concession or some sort of opportunity. They have free range chickens, which is really what they're most concerned about. They don't have a coop and they're afraid that foxes are gonna take their chickens. So that's what they're protecting. The alpacas are something new. They talk about wanting to bring in sheep in the letter. So it's pretty self-explanatory, but our peaceful and quiet enjoyment of our home is completely shot. I don't believe that their rights of their animals supersede the rights of our peaceful and quiet enjoyment of the home. And I told them, hey, come up with a solution in an email to them, please, you know, either build a structure for the animals, but the dog really doesn't quite work. It's not, there's no way around it. So I completely support the fosters and what they're going through. They've obviously lived through it for the entire summer where we have not, but we also have small children. And as I read through, they're 3 and 5. And as I read through this this document about these dogs, don't approach them, but they will use the judgment that they have to use the proper amount of force. Humans have a hard time determining what the proper amount of force is in a situation. So I'm not really going to rely on the dog's ability to judge what the proper amount of force is when it perceives as a threat. So if a child with a stick or a child hanging out in the lawn is perceived as a threat by this dog, I think that brings on a huge different level of liability above and beyond the barking.
Across Vermont, as across the nation, one big topic of conversation has been the reopening of schools, how to do it safely, and how to lighten the load on parents who have to work, whether from home or not. And there have been many unexpected surprises and outcomes that have come with the pandemic, some of them, in an odd way, beneficial. Most of them, probably not. One of the immediate term benefits for many communities in Vermont, especially in the southern tier of the state, has been an increase in the number of people who can work remotely moving to the state, driven in part by a perception that Vermont has done a good job controlling the spread of the virus and that rural country living and lifestyles have a lot to offer. The real estate market is sizzling, although that may turn out to be a short-term phenomenon. But for now, the arrival of new residents is also bringing an influx of new students to area schools. Burnburton Academy in Manchester and the Windhall School District, a so-called non-operating district because it doesn't run a school of its own and instead pays tuition to schools where the parents send their children, have both been affected by this enrollment spike. And so to learn more about how the situation was impacting them, we talked with Headmaster Mark Tashin of Burnburton Academy and Windhall School Board Chairwoman Jennifer Samuelson.
In a typical year, Burnburton will have 50 to 75 new students. That's 50 to 75 students who come to Burnburton who are not showing up in the eighth grade in any of our sending schools. So a chunk of them will come into ninth grade, and then there'll be another group coming into 10th, 11th, and 12th grades. So that's a normal year. You know, it floats in that range, which I think people would find surprisingly high. But that's, you know, we seem to be a magnet for people in a good way. Mm-hmm. This year, there's unquestionably a lot of real estate activity, and that's coming from a response to the global pandemic. And people who have some connection to Vermont finding a way to relocate here. I think it's facilitated also by the fact that a lot of people are working remotely. So if you're going to work remotely, you may as well work remotely from Vermont, you know, where we have the lowest COVID rate in the nation. And Bennington County has the lowest COVID rate in Vermont. So this starts to look like a really attractive place to just live and continue with your job in a remote fashion, and have the opportunity to send your kids to schools in a much safer environment than elsewhere. So that clearly is going on. It's a long way of saying we're seeing a bump. I don't know how big that bump is going to be just yet. But if a normal year we could have 50 to 75, you know, we may have 75 to 100 people showing up this year. So, but very clearly, we've been getting a lot of people coming who are saying, you know, we want to come here. Burnburton is opening for in-person instruction. My home district is going remote. Can we come here? How do I establish residency? You know, how does this all work? So I haven't quantified it, but there's a substantial number of people carrying that same story.
A couple of years ago, Windhall saw an unanticipated increase in the number of students living in the district, which put upward pressure on their school budget. They are now seeing another enrollment spike. Jennifer Samuelson fills us in.
When we passed the budget in March, we set our budget based on 202 students. That 202 included 15 ghost students. So we knew of, you know, we were expecting 187 that we knew about, and then we added in the additional 15, arrived at the number of 202. And yeah, your recollection is correct. I believe the number that we had last week at the meeting was right around 240. I mean, it'd be good to follow up with the families. I don't want to make assumptions, but I think if you look at the data, and I, you know, have spoken with some of the schools and they have provided the school board with information, many of the families that are moving to the area do appear to be coming from literally across the country. So I think it's a good guess that it's probably pandemic related. And there've been a couple articles in Vermont Digger that would seem to support that as well. I think the fact that we're an attractive town, I think is something to be proud of. I think, you know, for years we have been attracting new families, you know, many times from out of state to Wynn Hall. And I think as we look at the state with its declining population and sort of increasing average age, you know, Wynn Hall is bucking that trend, and I think that's fabulous. But you are correct, it does pose issues as far as the budget goes, because, you know, these are clearly students that were not anticipated when we passed our budget in March. But I think, you know, to the extent that these are people who are moving here in response to the pandemic, my hope is that that would be recognized, you know, within the legislature, and that there would be some relief that would be available to us, because although families, I think, are moving to Vermont all over the state, I think Wynn Hall is getting a disproportionate number of those families just because of how we are geographically located.
The enrollment spike is but one of the outcomes of the pandemic. Another is college admissions, where the economic impact of the virus has thrown many students' plans, and their parents, for financing college into question. VSAC, the Vermont Student Assistant Corporation, recently did a study on how COVID-19 was affecting their college plans. VSAC is also tapping into a special fund of more than $5 million to help students who might need additional financial assistance. Here to tell us about both the survey and the COVID fund is Marilyn Cargill, their Vice President of Financial Aid Services, Marketing and Research.
There were two things we were looking at. One was their enrollment plan, and the second one was how financially these families have been impacted by COVID. And we were interested in that because we run the state grant program, and we really wanted to know whether there were going to be significant changes that would either impact the state grant program, or could we modify the state grant program in some ways to mitigate the problems that might exist. So that's why we started the survey in the first place. And so the two big findings to me, the first one was that students really do intend to go back to school in Vermont this fall. So almost 90% of first-time students, like 90.5% of first-time students, and slightly over 85% of returning students said, we are going to be at school in the fall. That is a really high number in the middle of a pandemic. So that was interesting to us, and slightly higher than what we might have thought we were going to see. And those numbers start to change a little bit when you modify your question a little. So if you went from, are you planning to go back to school, to will you return to school if most of your classes are online? Then the question and answer changed a little bit. And instead of 90% saying they were going back, closer to 70% said they'd return, even if their classes were majority online. So we know that the way that school is going to be delivered will matter to students. And we know that our students really want to return. The second question that we asked, though, that was really important, was we asked these families whether or not they had been personally impacted by COVID from a financial perspective. So was their financial security hurt? We found that, and we were asking some, like, did you lose your job? Were your hours cut? Did your parents lose their job? Were their hours cut? Was there medical expenses that you incurred? So we had a series of questions that we asked, trying to figure out financial impact. 65% of the people who responded to the survey had been personally impacted by COVID-19 and their financial security. That is a really high number. That is a really high number. And that in turn launched some changes that the state has put in place to try to address that problem. Back in June, I believe, mid-June, late June, is they gave BSAC $5.1 million out of the COVID relief funds to address this problem. And what we're able to do is say to a family, if your income went down because of COVID-19, appeal to us. Let us know that, because I don't know what you know about financial aid, but it's a really interesting and very complex system. But you apply for financial aid using two-year-old income. So for the 21 school year, you're using your 2018 tax information. Well, 2018 was a whole different world than 2020. So what we said to families were, if you were impacted, we want you to use your 2020 income. And that has allowed a lot of families who have seen those direct impacts to be able to appeal and to be able to get additional state grant money to help offset those lost family wages. So we've been able to do that for a number of families. The other problem that students raised really early and schools raised was all of our Vermont schools are thinking about having some portion of their school year be remote, right? So it's not going to be everyone goes to school, you sit in a classroom and the professor's at the front. Like, we all know that there may be some of that, but there's going to be a lot of learning out of dorm rooms. There's going to be a lot of learning out of your home. And so that means every Vermonter who's in school needs a laptop or an iPad or some way to connect to those online classes. They need high-speed internet, or at least high enough speed so that they can get on the Zoom meetings to take part in classwork, be able to do the online exams. And so that was another thing that the state looked at, and there's been money appropriated that VSAC is using to help families that are in that situation as well. And the Vermont colleges across the state are nominating students that they believe will face that difficulty this fall. The takeaway that I really would like families to hear is one, that students in Vermont really are interested in being in college this fall, whether they're at home and studying remotely or they're on campus. Students have really indicated their desire to be there. And two, there are absolutely funds in a weird kind of way. There is more money right now to help families pay for college than there has ever been. And if you are looking at college, you definitely should be applying for financial aid. And if you have a lower income in 2020 than you did in 2018, you should be appealing to VSAC in your school. And if they walk away with those pieces of information, then that would be great.
So the starting point might be then your website there at vsac.org?
Yes, that's a fabulous place to start. If they are looking to say, you know, I'd like to appeal, how do I do that? They can just give us a phone call. We have a toll-free number that you can call anywhere in the state, or anywhere in the country for that matter. It's 1-800-882-4166. And very welcome to call us and we will help them understand whether or not their situation would qualify for appealing.
The coming weeks are going to be an interesting time on the education front as schools navigate their way through this phase of the pandemic. For the GNAT TV News Project, I'm Andrew McKeever.
Thanks for listening local. For more local content, visit GNAT.tv.